Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Ignites Well-Doing podcast. I'm your host, Tiagi Delanrol, filling in for Adjoa K. Boahidi. Today, my guest is Kirsten Eastwood, president of Dress for Success Toronto. We're going to be speaking about empowering women for economic independence, the future of workplace readiness. We'll be exploring Kirsten's leadership in workplace development, community engagement, and economic empowerment for women. This episode will highlight her work at Dress for Success Toronto, the importance of fostering inclusive workplaces, and how organizations can support women in achieving professional success. So to give a little bit of background about Kirsten, Kirsten is a transformative leader dedicated to building economic opportunities for women through strategic partnerships, community engagement, and innovative programming. As president of Dress for Success Toronto, Kirsten is driving the organization's mission to empowering women to achieve economic independence through networking, skills development, and professional attire. With a career spanning nonprofit leadership, fundraising, and education, Kirsten has a proven track record of creating impactful initiatives that strengthen communities and improve access to opportunities. Previously, she's led community development efforts for Lauramont School, driving enrollment, parent engagement, partnership development, and fundraising to record levels. We're so excited, Kirsten, today for you to be joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiagi, and thanks for that wonderful opening. I'm very much appreciated, and I'm so excited to be here.
Of course. We're so excited to have you speak. But, you know, at the Council, we're all about human-centric leadership, and we're centering around you today as a human. So we're going to start things off by asking you a couple questions from the Proust questionnaire.
Okay.
So Marcel Proust, as you know, he believed that these questions really got to the heart of the character of an individual. So we're going to start with the very first question. Which talent would you most like to have?
I would love to be able to fly. The whole idea of being able to be above the earth and to be able to look down and have that effortless ability to move quickly. That's one of those things since I was a kid that I thought would be an amazing superpower to have.
That would be quite the talent, right? To have that ability to instantly get up and go.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay, so the next question is, if you were to die and you were to come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Well, I'm looking right now at our 6-month puppy, Rufus, and I would want to come back as him because he has a pretty great life. And so to be an animal like that where you don't have to have cares and worries and you have people who love and support you and everything you do is around unconditional love. So if I could come back, it would be as Rufus, our 6-month-old Cavapoo.
We were just speaking with another leader and she said the exact same thing. So I think a lot of folks would like to come back as their beloved dogs or pets.
Exactly.
Right? Because they're so well cared for and they have such a joy, right, for life and all the little things.
Yeah,
and especially
the gore every day by the dog is lovely. So yeah, I think it's there's a lot to be said for that kind of life where everything that they do is all about love and joy.
Ah, I know. If only we could have that too.
Yes,
as humans, we need more of that in the world.
We do,
or at least a focus, or at the thought of that being important. So kind of, you know, really trying to understand the mission around Dress for Success. Can you share with us more about the mission and how it's evolving to meet the needs of women in today's workforce and
sure.
who you serve?
So Dress for Success Toronto is one of about 130 affiliates across the world. There are 13 in Canada, but we each function as our own independent charities. So we have full agency to support women in our geographic area, which for us is the GTHA. So a pretty large area and a very diverse area. The mission of the organization is to move women to economic independence. And the core program that we have is our suiting program, which provides women with professional attire so that they have access to clothing for interviews in the first few days on the job. But I think we all fully understand that a great jacket will not get you a job. And so we have integrated other programs into our suiting program so that women have access to mentoring, to career specialists, to someone who can look at their resume and give them valuable feedback, to practicing interview skills, and then someone who can talk to them when the interview doesn't go well, or someone who can be their cheering squad when the interview does go well. So we provide really a community of support, a hub of support to women who come to us because they're trying to get into the workforce. They're navigating the complexity of what work looks like in Toronto. And it's an emotional piece as well as a tangible piece, because there's the logistics around doing a resume, getting ready for an interview. But then there's also the whole building up the confidence, which is a key part of what we do with our clients. So we work with women or anyone who identifies as a woman. And we work with a lot of women who are newcomers to Canada. A lot of our clients have been here for under 5 years and have been looking for work, often trying to take their foreign trained credentials and apply them in the Canadian context, which is very difficult. We also work with a number of women who identify as racialized minorities. And so they come to us, and they're also dealing with a number of systemic barriers. And so those barriers for all of our clients could be poverty. It could be housing. It could be domestic abuse. It could be racism. And it could be sexism. And so I think it's, how do we deal with all of those competing barriers and make sure that we as an organization that operates through a feminist lens really supports women on their career journey, whatever that might be. And we work with women really 18 to 65. I mean, as you know, Taggy, from your support with our work, is that we have started to work with youth, so women 18 to 29. Which is a completely different context from our core clients, our original clients, which were women who were 45 plus. And so that's really opened our eyes to, how do we support women at the early age of 18 to 29, coming out of high school, college or university, and moving into the workforce? And how do we be very preventative in that approach so that women don't need our support when they're 45 or 50, because we've given some of those core competencies, we've grown their confidence, and we've also provided them with a really safe community in which to be able to navigate their career journey. So that really is essentially what we are doing. And we are partnering with a whole range of organizations, community-based organizations, corporations, really to share the story of what we do, because our goal is that our clients find jobs in those community and corporate partners, great workplaces that take care of their employees. And so that's our ultimate goal. And so we've evolved from an organization that's focused on clothing to one that's looking at all those wraparound supports that women need in order to be successful in securing a job that is a good job and a job that brings them meaning and joy.
Oh, thank God that you exist, right, in the world for the women that really need this type of support. I'm so excited to be working with you in some capacity, right? And definitely sharing the message with respect to the organization, even on this platform. So now, I mean, we're going to dive in a little bit further to what you just shared around workplace readiness. What are some of the biggest challenges women face when entering or re-entering the workforce? And how does your organization help them address these barriers, potentially even at different stages that they may encounter?
That's a great question. And that's one that our clients present every time they come and meet with us. So what we have found, that one of the big issues is imposter syndrome, is that we have women who are highly educated. A vast majority of our clients have some kind of university or post-secondary education. But they don't believe in themselves. So they look at a job, and I think this happens to women everywhere, is we look at a job posting and we think, oh, I can only do 5 out of the 10 things that they're looking for. Whereas a man will look at it and go, oh, I can do 5 of those things, so I'm going to apply. And so I work with a lot of women around the whole idea around that imposter syndrome. I'm not good enough. I'm not qualified. And so that really is a lot of the work that we're doing, is we're building up their personal assets, their sense of themselves, their self-esteem, their belief that they can do the work, or at least try to be able to apply for a job. So that's one barrier that we see right across the board. And then we see women who are dealing with some of the tangible issues around credentialing. So we might have a woman who was trained as a nurse, say in the Philippines, and she comes here. She can't work as a nurse, even though we badly need nurses. And so she might decide that she's going to be a PSW. And that is very noble work. It's really important work, but it also tends to be precarious work because of the nature of it. And so how do we help that woman to be able to upskill so that she can get her nursing credentials recognized, so that she can move into an opportunity that benefits her, benefits community? And that's a process that we don't do ourselves. We connect that woman with our community partners, but it is a key part of the work that we do, is how do we have women constantly looking up and upskilling themselves so that they can see themselves doing what they really want to do and not to feel like they have to settle for something that's all that's available. So that's another barrier that we see. And then there's obviously issues like access to technology. With so many jobs becoming hybrid jobs now, how do we make sure that people have both the access to technology as well as the understanding of technology to be able to do that? And then it's softer competencies, things like negotiating. You know, if someone's offered a salary, how do we help her to say, you know what, I think I'm worth more than that, and place value on her time and her expertise? So negotiation is a big part of what we will encounter. Decision making is a big piece of it. And we see this in places like our boutique, where women can come and access one outfit, and they could only have one outfit. And so they have to make some tough decisions. And even then, it's really hard for them to be able to make decisions about, do I go with the brown shoes or the black shoes? And so that's something that we need to support them on, because that's a small decision. But if they're in a position where they have to make key decisions that are work-related, we want to make sure that that woman has the confidence and the experience to be able to make effective decisions as well, too. And then it's agency, that sense of owning their own story, their own career path, and for them to be the one that can advocate for themselves. Self-advocacy is really important. And I think any one of us find it hard to do in different situations. So networking, connecting our clients to key corporate partners, and really building up their confidence is a big part of that too. You know, we've had some recent campaigns that we've done where we have highlighted clients and their stories, and we have made a big profile through our What Suits You campaign. And that's been a big part of us demonstrating belief in a woman who is dealing with a lot of very challenging issues. We have a client right now who's living full time in a shelter. She's working full time and really wants to be adequately housed. But she comes into our boutique and she demonstrates a sense of growing confidence in her belief that she can do that. And that kind of thing is important for us to support and recognize in ways that we can control, but honor the fact that it's her story, it's her life, and she needs to make those decisions herself. So I think those are a lot of the main barriers we see. They tend to be softer issues as opposed to hard issues like, where do you access job postings? It really is more those softer pieces. And the networking. We all know that if you're going to get a job, the easiest thing is to find someone who can connect you to that organization. Applying to LinkedIn or one of those other sites is just going to be very challenging. And so a lot of our clients don't have that network. And making those connections is really important for us, so that they then have a person that they can speak to, either through our organization or one of our partners, to be able to say, I want to learn more about what you're doing. What are some of the opportunities that I can access to be able to make this happen?
Yeah, it's such great work. And from what I really see in like hearing actually what you're sharing at this point is around mapping. Like you really help identify what the needs are and really map out how they can overcome, right? And get to that other side, which they clearly want to be a part of. You know, contributing to society and really helping create an opportunities for themselves. So it's great that the organization exists in allowing the ability to break down those barriers. So we talk a lot about inclusivity within the council, right? It's such an important topic. I'd love to understand from you, like, what role do you see employers playing in fostering inclusive workplaces that supports women's career growth? And what strategies can we implement to make tangible impact?
That's a great question. And I know it certainly is it's a hot topic these days, isn't it? The whole issue of equity, diversity, and inclusivity. I think this is, again, where we need to build our confidence for our clients in terms of really owning who they are and how they value what they bring to an organization. But it's also identifying organizations that get it, that understand that the women who are applying for jobs that might come from Dress for Success are women who are extremely well-educated. They have access to support through us. And it's often it's taking a chance on someone who brings a lot that can be celebrated within their work context. You know, so many times I think EDI, it's like a token activity that an organization does. I think we can tell when an organization truly gets it. So, you know, what is their leadership? When they have groups like employee resource groups that are focused on women's issues, you know, give them a budget to work with. So many times we work with organizations that come to us and say, oh, we want to celebrate something around International Women's Day. And so we will put a price on some of that because we are a nonprofit and we need to be able to support our programs. And they'll have no budget to be able to support issues around diversity or inclusion or women's issues, and I'm using that word in air quotes. And so I think that's part of it is if organizations are going to value the work that women are doing or newcomers are bringing, how do we make sure that they're budgeting appropriately and that they're providing the right resources to make sure that that work can truly take off? Otherwise, it just becomes something that someone does on the side of their desk. I think it's openness to the stories that our clients bring. If we look at some of our clients and the stories that they have, you know, coming to Canada from different parts of the world, knowing no one here, having very little money, and really using their grit and determination to be able to come to us, come to other organizations to be able to find a place to call their home, to be able to connect to opportunities. Most of us have not had that kind of history, have not had that kind of life experience. And so how do we value that? Because when you look at what happens when someone takes that risk, you know, they're courageous. They have taken a risk. They have belief in themselves. They are willing to try again and again to get to where they need to be. All of those, to me, make up a really valuable potential employee for any organization. And so how do organizations then be open to that and hire differently, hire in a way that embraces opportunities to bring people who may not be fully qualified, but who are going to be loyal, who are going to be provocative. And I use that in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. In a way that's going to enhance an organization. And that's part of our conversation with corporate partners. We work with a lot of banks, our accounting firms, law firms, tech firms. And so we use our ability to advocate, and I use advocate more in terms of educate these corporations so that they truly can rethink some of the ideas they have around hiring. And so we don't have a lot of experience yet. This is something that we just started to do, but we are now working with organizations who are going to sort of take the bridge between us getting our clients to be job ready and then bridging them to employment. And then in that process, what does that look like in terms of the tools organizations may need to have, the educating we may want to do with them, as well as any of the kind of supports we can provide to women as they are navigating not just getting ready for a job, but actually moving into a job too. So that's the work that we have ahead. We're very excited about that. And we have a couple of things coming up this year that are going to start to accelerate that that process.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, earlier on, you actually shared with us, you know, the value and the importance of networking, right?
Yes.
When you think of in your career, networking is absolutely critical. But you also bring something really interesting to the mix because your background is also in strategic partnerships. Mm. So looking back on your background and building these partnerships, how do collaborations with businesses and community organizations amplify the impact of Dress for Success?
Oh, hugely. I mean, we are a small organization. We are 8 courageous, mighty, smart, dedicated women who are moving this work forward in Toronto. And that is replicated across Canada with other affiliates. And we can't do our work without working with corporate partners. One, from a financial perspective, we have partnerships with organizations that help to support our programs. We do not have core funding. We don't have funding from different levels of government to be able to support the work. And so we work in partnership with organizations to be able to move that work forward. I'm a firm believer that we need to be seen as an organization that is a clear partner and not a one that has the perception of being a charity with our hand out. When we work with a company like a bank, we want to make sure that they see value in the work that they do as well. So when we have an initial conversation, we talk about the different opportunities, which could be from sponsoring an event. It could be around employee engagement, because that's a big issue for companies right now. It could be around some kind of social impact work. So being involved in some of our assessment measures on how we look at the impact of the work we do. Or it could be a number of custom opportunities. We have a very flexible approach to that. So we'll present a menu of opportunities to a company, and then we'll negotiate and say, you know, what would you like to do? How would you like to be involved? We are very much moving away from a transactional partnership where we might engage a company once a year to sponsor an event, to one where we have a relational approach. So over the course of the year, that we might reach out to a company and say, you know what, we had this opportunity to do some funding work and we would like to have you on board because we need that corporate element as part of our application. And they might come to us and say, you know, we have an opportunity, would love to be able to work with you or your clients to be able to do something unique. And so that's a big piece around the work that we're doing now, is really leveraging the uniqueness of what we do, you know, that essence of Dress for Success Toronto, and that combination of our programs that really provide a great appeal to large organizations. And so we've been successful at branching out and extending our network of the companies that we work with. And then with our community partners, doing the same thing, making sure we're being very clear and intentional about referrals, both from an agency and from us to them, and not to try to duplicate effort. The nonprofit sector right now is not in a great place. It's really highly competitive. You know, with all the political things going on now, we're not quite sure about the impact on the economy. And anytime the economy is affected negatively, that has an impact on giving. People are unable to give to organizations. Companies are tightening things as well, and so may not be able to support philanthropically. And so we really want to make sure that we are finding ways to be very flexible and nimble in our approach and supporting organizations, which means that we don't want to take money away from another organization that's doing something much better than we do. So we need to stay very, very much, you know, focused on our mission, you know, find the organizations that align well with what we're trying to achieve, and get other people to amplify the work we're doing. We're doing a big event at the end of March for International Women's Day. It's called The Power of Possibility. It's all about embracing the impossible. And so we have a panel of women who are speaking, and each of those women has said, I'm happy to amplify this as well. And so that's a big part of it for us. How do we reach out to new people, people who aren't in our network, people who have a belief in what we're doing and also want to be part of that? So I'm excited about the things coming along in 2025 and the ways that we've tried to create that sticky factor about our organization that does have us providing great opportunities for companies to get involved, to have their brand aligned with ours, to get their employees involved, and really to celebrate that we are making a difference in the lives of women in the city of Toronto.
Yeah, you definitely are making a big difference in the lives of women. And it's all of the thoughtful, it's all of the different thoughtful ways that you go about doing it. Right, in building. I've come to some of your events and I know that they're so impactful. I can see the room full of women who are really genuinely overjoyed by the content, by the information, by the insights that are shared among the leaders that you're able to coordinate. So kudos to the team, right? Eight. I wasn't aware that it was, yeah. It was eight. I thought it was, for some reason, I thought it was bigger.
Yeah, well, we've had to make some changes this year and last year, like many organizations, really adjusting to the economy. But our team is very focused and very dedicated, and it's also thanks to people like you. You were the moderator for our panel at our mastering event last year, and a group of women who were there attending at no charge because we were able to fund the program and the panel and the moderator, you donated your time to participate. All of that is so important. And the end result was a really great collective experience for everyone who was there. There were 200 plus women in that room. And a couple of male allies, which is also important. And that's the work we need to do, is just to really move forward and find ways to make it happen.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Okay. So, you also spoke briefly about mentorship earlier. If we kind of dive into that area, what are some of the key mentorship and leadership programs that have made a real difference in helping women advance through mentoring?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, different models of mentoring. And I think people traditionally think of mentoring as one person and another. One person who's got more experience, perhaps more power, more access, providing advice and information to someone who has less. And that model doesn't work for us and for our clients, for some of the reasons I mentioned earlier about the whole idea of imposter syndrome. We've worked with organizations and we'll have someone who's, a very successful woman, maybe a VP at a bank, and she really wants to mentor our clients. And our client will look at that and go, oh, my goodness, there's no way I can speak to, Sally Jones, VP of, this bank, because I'm not good enough. And so they don't show up for the mentoring call. And so where we have found much more traction is with peer mentoring, because we also know that our clients aren't always the ones with less agency and less power. They have a lot to be able to share to other people. And so peer mentoring has actually been a model that we've used because it puts everyone on the same level. We really, to the point earlier about inclusion, we want to make sure that we're not having our clients feeling inferior to other people. And so how do we make sure that they're feeling like they have something to contribute? Create those forums to be able to bring people together, really to talk and collaborate as a group. And so the conversation feeds off each other and you have more yes and conversations with a sense of everyone coming away from that. When I've been in a room and I talk to people perhaps who were in a different sector or a different generation, it's all a big learning for me. And so that's an important piece that then I can use and take into other parts of my work. So mentoring is key. I think just having someone to talk to is important, but it's also about the how and the why. Like mentoring for the sake of mentoring doesn't make any sense. But mentoring, if there's intention to better understand, to break down barriers, to creatively problem solve, to make those connections, all of those are really valuable. And again, we want the mentors to walk away feeling equally valued, but also they were able to participate in something that was a shared learning experience. And so that's more the direction that we have looked at. That's my experience when I've done traditional mentoring with a number of organizations. And it doesn't always create that same meaningful impact as when you bring a group of people together to be able to share. And so as we develop our programs, that certainly is the model that we want to be able to use more of and create different ways. We're very open to different kinds of mentoring and different models that might work for our clients.
I love that. I didn't actually really understand the nuances of mentoring, and I loved how you explained it, specifically around peer mentoring, right? The fact that these ladies, you know, they'll likely respond better to peer mentoring as opposed to traditional mentoring type of models. You know, right now in the world, Things are changing, and it has, of course, really changed since COVID-19, right? When COVID-19 hit, we realized that work could be done remotely, and now we're moving into more of hybrid models, so different types of models of working. How do you think these shifts are impacting career opportunities for women, and how can we ensure equitable access?
Well, the one thing that does concern me is the whole idea around social isolation. And I know that we've talked about this extensively, is that, you know, it's great. The idea of working from home is great if you have social supports in other parts of your life. But if you are someone who has just moved to Canada, you're living on your own, or you're living in shared accommodation where you're not with friends or family, then that could be a very isolating experience. And so there is a great social dynamic about coming into a workplace as well. And certainly for younger people, as you start on your careers, the whole idea of being in your, you know, little apartment or, working from a library, it's not the same experience as we had when you came into work, and it was a social piece as well. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it's finding that balance. I know that there's different sectors that are calling people back into work more. Some of the banks, government is, and some never left. I mean, you think about certain jobs, certainly retail sector jobs, have never been that way. Schools, when I worked in a school, with the exception of a few weeks during COVID, we were there in person because you can't deliver an education program really well for little kids when you're doing it through a screen. So I think it's finding that balance. It's also then bringing people back into a place that has an impact on the larger community and the economy. I think about how many small businesses were affected and went under because they didn't have people who were there downtown to buy coffee or to buy lunch or whatever else. So the idea around the hybrid work is it's a great idea. My team does it a couple of times a week. I appreciate it. But it's also then how we work when we're in the office needs to be different than how we work from home. So when I'm in the office with my team, you know, we have meetings, we have creative planning sessions. We use that time very differently than when I'm working from home. And so I think it's having people understand, you know, how their lifestyle and their social needs need to be connected to the kind of work that they're looking for and how that work is done. Because that social isolation, it's a key concern for our clients. The Toronto Foundation, you know, indicated that social isolation can have the negative impact on your health of smoking half a pack of cigarettes a day. So how do we make sure that we're addressing these issues and helping people find that? I'm not going to say work-life balance because I don't believe in that balance, but the whole integration between the kind of work we're doing, the way we're doing the work, where we're doing the work, who we're doing it with, all of those meshed with people's personal needs is so important. And that's a big systemic challenge. I know every organization is trying to figure it out. We did too. We had to reset in September, and having everyone working from the office and home on the same day. So that had an impact on our programs, but it's created a much more connected group because we see each other more often. And then we're finding ways to connect and collaborate when we're working from home.
Yeah. One thing that I think I really take away from that piece is really around having that intention, right? So when you are in the office, you set an intention for making sure that there's opportunities for connection. Yeah. I think many companies, many organizations, they can pay heed to that, right? That you've made that as a leader, you've made that intentional kind of requirement for making that space and time to connect. So that's great.
Yeah. And I think one of the things we do an assessment with our team, one of the things people were looking for is just more time together, more social time, more time to build relationships, more time to take lunch, which none of us are really good at. But all of those things when we're in the office that we can remind each other and encourage each other. And so I think that's a big piece. And as an employer, that costs us nothing to do. It really is just, you know, around shifting behaviors, a different mindset, and having that collegial support that is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I would be remiss to not ask this one question around how professional attire plays such an important role in building confidence and workplace confidence. So can you share ways in which you're instilling confidence at Dress for Success?
Sure. And the suiting program or the clothing program, it's an integral piece of it. If you think that we have women who come to us who don't have clothing that they feel confident in to go to a job interview. I mean, we all know that, you know, when you're wearing something that you love to wear, that you feel better about yourself. And you want to have our clients going into any kind of situation like that, feeling really good about themselves. When women come into our boutique, so we have a lovely boutique. It looks like a store. We have great volunteers who are there. And we have women come in and they look a bit nervous, a bit anxious about not knowing what to expect. And they come in and they're greeted by volunteers. They're given a tour of the space. They understand, you know, the space for clothing, for networking, and for career development. And then they can take their time. They can take 2.5 hours to be able to find an outfit that appeals to them. And it's a full outfit. So it's something that would be like a jacket and a shirt and a pair of pants, a pair of shoes. So they feel different when they're in the clothing. We have a whole space where they can have their photograph taken in their outfit. And they leave very differently. So they leave with, you know, a beautiful bag that has their clothes in it, and that they are excited about where they're going to wear that outfit. And so when we see that whole process, it really helps them to understand that it's an intentional piece of the work that we do that provides them with something that they may not know how much they need it until they're wearing the outfit, and then they can visualize themselves in that work environment. One of the things that we've had to navigate is both working with a younger demographic. So typically, you know, a woman who's 25 does not want to wear the kind of clothes that her mother is wearing. And that's a lot of the donations that we've been getting, because our boutique has both new and used donations. And so women who are retiring, perhaps having worked in a bank for 30 years, will donate their great suits. And so that is necessarily what a 25-year-old wants to work. And the whole notion of clothing in work has shifted over the past few years as well. So that's caused us to also reach out and be more specific and targeted in the kind of clothing that we're looking for. So if we're working with people who are in tech, maybe there's a different notion of clothing for work. The creative industries, it's more informal. There are certainly still sectors like banking that are more formal. And so I think that's helped us to really understand what workplace clothing looks like and what people need to feel good about themselves. So the boutique is a wonderful experience to see that transformation from when someone comes in unsure and uncertain. And then based on the experience and the connection that she's had with us and our volunteers, how she walks out just with a sense of hope and purpose. And that's what we aspire for her.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. Just now kind of wrapping things up at this stage, I'm gonna help you rewind time. Okay. So we're gonna rewind time all the way back to your early 20s, right? You've just graduated, you're starting the work, you're in the workforce. What type of advice would you give yourself now knowing everything you know now.
Yeah. And I think if I went back to my early 20s, I would, there's no linear path to what I started doing and where I am now. I started working in private sector. I worked in a few different cities. I worked in banking for a number of years. I've been an entrepreneur for 10 years. And then I've worked in government and the nonprofit sector. And I think if I sort of, and I've taken those risks and those leaps of opportunity, and I'm no regrets about any of that. In many ways, I wish I'd found the work that I'm doing now sooner. But I don't think I could have done this work without having gone through some of the different risks that I took earlier on. And so I think that's an important reflection. I think that if I went back to my early 20s self, it would be, to really have the, to really reflect on the things that I liked to do, the things that I was really good at doing. I didn't have much guidance from school in terms of things to do. And I kind of initially fell into certain kinds of work. Mm-hmm. And I think it would just be that whole reflection and taking the time to think about, what do I really like to do? What are the things that get me excited about, in the morning when I wake up? And so I think that self-reflection was one I was not on my radar at all. And that really it's something that was important. I think I was in a rush to get to the next phase without taking time to pause and say, what are the things that I want to do? What aligns with my values? And how do I make sure that I'm doing something that has meaning? And at that time, I think I was just trying to get up and ready and launch and find a job that that paid reasonably well, and so that wasn't a factor. But I think I might still have ended up in the same place, but I might also have found a faster way to get to doing some of this work.
That's great. I mean, we have listeners from, I think, different stages in life, right? So it's always good to understand and hear from leaders their insights around what they would tell their younger selves. And what you've just shared, it is something that I'm seeing as a pattern from many leaders, right? One aspect was around just enjoying the journey. Also, don't be in such a rush. So kind of very similar to what you just shared as well. So Kirsten, this, we're going to conclude our episode today. Thank you so much. On behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, you are doing such great work. You're leading by example and just really inspiring women to, I think also contribute and give of themselves, right? I'm really inspired by the work you do. And, I'm so glad that we're able to share your message here today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I always appreciate working with you. And if I could just end on a note that I remember years ago when I was working and running a nonprofit women's organization, and a funder said, what are the things that your clients need the most? And I said, well, they all need access to housing and access to a job and access to accessing basic needs. But the one thing that they need the most is hope. Hope that tomorrow will be a better day, that they can have food to put in their children's lunchboxes, that they can find a job, they can make friends. And so I think that idea around hope is something that we provide to our clients. And I think with the partners we work with, I think everyone wants to be inspired by hope and to feel hopeful. There's a lot of negative stuff going on in the world right now. And if we can be a place that can help people to be inspired by the idea of hope, I think that feels like a good place for us to be.
What a beautiful way to end the podcast. Thank you so much, Kirsten, for your time.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize wellbeing in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.